You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are watching, listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is August 17th, 2021. And we're going to be talking with our good friend, Craig Hemke, tfmetalsreport.com, to find out what is really going on with the price of gold, with the repo market, with the so-called real economy, if it even exists anymore. And well, let's get started. So, Craig, it's great, as always, to have you back on. Oh, if you got a question for Craig, email is kl@carrielutz.com. So we wanted to touch base with you, Craig. Appreciate you coming back on. What is behind the latest decline in gold and silver?
Oh, well, Carrie, that's a multifaceted answer. I mean, first and foremost, it's the futures prices that we're talking about, right? So, and like anything else, it's supply and demand for the futures contract. And right now there's not that much demand. And so that then ties into the other things you mentioned. Why is there so little demand? And there's this perception in the people that buy the contracts and the hedge funds that buy the contracts and the, you know, whatever. There's this perception. They believe this transitory stuff. They think that even though if you buy a 10-year treasury today at 1.3% and inflation is at 5.3% and you're losing 4% a year of purchasing power, they think that that's transitory, right? Do the math on that one real quick, Carrie. If you lose 4% the first year, how positive do real rates have to go the next 9 years just to get you back to zero, right? But people keep buying, the Fed and others keep buying treasuries. And so you've got this notion of transitory and that the negative real rates are transitory and everything else that's impacting things. And then finally, what happened back in June when everything turned? They were talking at the time about the dot plot and whether we're going to taper and everything else. But the biggest change was that the Fed acknowledged that they were on the verge of seeing short-term rates go negative. I did a thing with Danielle DiMartino Booth on my site back in February, and she said, yeah, it's not so much, it's equal parts. The Fed's problem is yield curve control. They can't let the long end go up, but they can't let all of this cash they've created crowd out and go driving into short-term things to the point where there's more demand than there is supply and rates go negative. They can't have that either. So Powell's got this line he's got to walk. So as we were coming into that June FOMC 2 months ago, almost to the day, when everything, you know, and we've been dealing with that since, the bigger news was that they announced they're going to start paying 5 basis points on interest on excess reserves. The two-year note shot up 5 or 10 basis points, and this demand for repo, to use the current COVID vernacular, quarantining all these reserves.
Sterilizing. Actually, they call it sterilization, okay. And that isn't meant in a reproductive sense.
Right. So on all these dollars, think of this. There's now every single day you're getting $1 trillion or more that is being parked at the Fed for 5 basis points. That's, again, not like 5 basis points overnight, like an annualized 5 basis points. But that is infinitely better by the math than zero. Before it was zero. Now, repo demand was rising, but so was this demand for everything short term, money market funds, banks, whatever, looking to park all this cash that they suddenly have for that the Fed has created over the last 18 months. And so the rush was to actually going to shove short rates negative. They couldn't do that. So they start paying 5 basis points. So now think of it this way. There's $1 trillion in the hands of money market funds, but also banks and the like, that every day is being sterilized, quarantined. It could have otherwise been in other things like the stock market or the bond market or the gold market. And so that little thing has tied up some liquidity, and that's impacting things. And the last thing too, Carrie, people always have to remember that when they hear about the dollar going up, that's one of the biggest scams and charades that the bankers have created. Because when you hear, when Bloomberg says, "Yeah, the dollar's up today," and it's up as we speak, like a half a point, that's the dollar index. And what's the dollar index? That compares the U.S. dollar versus a basket of other unbacked currencies, most significantly the euro, but also the yen and the pound, you know, and you go down the list. So the when the Fed starts talking about, well, we might pull back and taper some of our mortgage-backed securities or something, if they begin to even slightly slow the creation of dollars while the ECB is still full throttle, you know, full speed ahead, then all of a sudden the dollar relative to the euro looks a little better in that traditional sense. And so the dollar rallies. And then you got these machines that trade these futures contracts to the dollar going up, and they start dumping the futures contracts.
Right.
And so that's where all these things ultimately fit together. It won't go on. We're already seeing some signs in the chart getting better. You know, it's just what it was like this last year too. And then all of a sudden you have this massive spike in price. And so we just, you know, have to recognize it for what it is and deal with it.
Hey, so it's the old best looking horse in the glue factory, right? Argument there. Yeah. And, you know, at one time, 10 years ago, the Fed was paying 25 basis points to park that money and sterilize it. This is something they learned from Japan during the lost generation. I mean, we're in the next lost generation in Japan now. Let's face it, nothing's changed. Their economy's in the dumps. So is this what we have to look forward to, or is it worse than this?
Yeah, it's basically the same fight now. And it's funny, Kerry, it was just a year ago at this time. And this is always an important part time in the Fed calendar, because the Jackson Hole meeting is coming up late next week. And then that is usually used as kind of a trial balloon thing, where Powell or Bernanke or Mother Yellen would, you know, tell you where they want to go for the rest of the year. And then you get that then laid out, you know, ink put to paper, so to speak, at the September FOMC. Well, it was just a year ago that the trial balloons came out in July about how the Fed was going to change how they calculated inflation and their inflation policy. The 2% was not going to be enough to hike rates. They're going to start averaging inflation. And that's exactly what Powell announced at Jackson Hole. And that's exactly what went into effect in September at the September FOMC. But the speech that Powell gave last year was all about his big demon of deflationary expectations and how we don't want to go down the road of Japan, where deflationary expectations lead to deflation, which lead to more deflationary expectations, which lead to more deflation. And now here we are, just 12 months later, you know, running 5.4%, or the producer price index last week was 1% a month, which is 12.6% annualized. Remarkable. Yeah. How that has changed. So now Powell is laying out his plans for, you know, he's expected to announce some sort of taper of QE or their intention or a plan for that next week. It will probably be something that has to do with the mortgage-backed securities part of it, because they can't step away from the treasury market. And what I'd expect, Kerry, is the classic either for the dollar, buy the rumor, sell the news, or for gold, sell the rumor as it's going on for the last 2 months, then buy the news. No, you know, nothing ever goes straight up in a trend line to infinity, and nothing ever goes straight down to zero, unless it's Enron.
Very true.
Trends eventually change. And so what we've got to now be on the lookout for is that change of trend. And you can kind of see that now on the chart. So I think we're finally making some progress.
Yeah. Well, I call it the annual Jackson Dig the Hole Deeper conference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
That's the way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because each time they dig the hole deeper. And look, we talked about this when they were doing all the stimmies, and it's like, how could it not lead to major inflation?
Yeah.
There was no possible way it couldn't, because this was different than just giving the banks money. This was helicopter money. It really was. And everybody had always predicted that it was going to take place. And I had my doubts, I have to admit, but then it happened. And you can't not have inflation. The only way you don't have inflation, well, I mean, look, they're going to try to do a Fed coin and then they'll freshness date the coins. So you have to use by a certain date where it becomes worthless. That's going to lead to a major rampage to buy everything. It's worse than inflation, having a expiration date on your currency. This reminds me of New York City with Metro cards. All right. It used to be you bought a subway token. And the subway token became kind of a shadow currency. You could buy stuff with tokens because they had a definitive value. And then they switched to the MetroCard technology, and then they started putting expiration dates on it. So there, it's kind of like you forgot your card, it expires, you're kind of screwed. But here, it's like you race off, you buy anything you can, stuff you don't want that you could barter just to avoid the expiration date on your currency, which is why none of this can work.
Right. And you know, like, as you said, it all filters through. And that's why this whole notion of transitory. And I don't know if you notice this, but that's changing too. Now it's,
yes,
it's temporary. Not so much we're going back to sub 2%. We're just going to, it's inflation is going to stop screaming higher and it's going to stabilize up here. Well, maybe, but you're still in. I mean, they're not going to let, they can't let rates go up. So we're going to be running these sharply negative real interest rates for as long as you can imagine. And eventually that correlation, which is about 95% historically, gold to real interest rates go up. You get a positive after inflation return on your treasury note. That's bad for gold. Real interest rates go down. You get a negative real return. Well, that makes gold look pretty good. You know, so you got to store gold. You got to insure gold. You got all these carry, you know, what we call a carry cost to it. But that beats the pants off of negative 3% guaranteed loss of purchasing power in a treasury. And so it's good for gold. And the Fed has done this in the past. This is how they managed the extreme debt to GDP ratios coming out of World War II. They ran sharply negative real interest rates for almost a decade. So this is where they're going again. And eventually the gold market's going to pay attention to this. It's just that for the last whatever it's been, really since November, there has been this perception that the Fed is going to be tightening and normalizing and whatever, and then everything else has gone with it that has then driven demand for gold futures and silver futures too down. But I suspect that's going to change. And a lot of these signs are starting to line up. You mentioned, we talked about Jackson Hole and the September FOMC. Look, I don't want to make a big deal about the debt ceiling because it's a joke anyway, right? But that might impact things negatively for the dollar in September as well. And so if you can get the dollar to start going down, the technical landmarks on the way back up are going to start getting crossed. And the metal should not only stabilize, but have a pretty good fourth quarter.
All right. So did we hit the physical floor again?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
FPX Nickel is developing the large-scale Dakar Nickel District in central British Columbia. Within the district is FPX Nickel's PEA stage Baptiste Nickel Deposit, which is projected to be among the world's top 10 largest nickel mines by annual output. The Baptiste Deposit has the potential for the lowest quartile operating costs at just $2.74 per pound. And compared to recent global nickel mines, the project requires a low capex. FPX is also commencing its first ever drill program at its Van target in the Dakar Nickel District. Surface samples have indicated that the Van target footprint is larger in scale and 10 to 15% higher in grade than Baptiste. FPX Nickel trades in Canada as FPX and on the OTC under FPOCF. To learn more, go to FPXNickel.com. That's FPXNickel.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Maybe, because you can, even if you look like at the silver chart, silver blasted higher about a year ago and then came down and double bottomed at 22 in September and December of last year, the silver futures, then bottomed at 24 when the dollar was at about at this level in March. And now in the past week since that smash 8-9 days ago, has bottomed twice at 23. So there's, you can pretty clearly see their support down here between 22 and 24. And if you look at it as a longer, I guess, I don't know how accurate it is to look at it this way, Kerry, but I think there's really some value in considering this. After, you know, everything that happened around the financial crisis in QE 1, 2, and 3, silver traded for 6 years, roughly between 14 and 18. Now, I occasionally might get above 18. Sometimes it fell, you know, all the way down to 14. But really, it was in a range for 6 years. Call it an average cost of 16. That's a long time for producers, traders, you know, mining companies, bankers, you name it. Mints, unallocated account support and providers. That's a lot of time for people to kind of get complacent and used to this price that doesn't move. And then last year, in a period of like 3 weeks, it exploded higher from 18 to 29. So now we've spent a year with all of those market participants kind of getting used to it, waiting to see if we're going to pull back. You know, well, you know, we keep bouncing off this 22 to 24 levels. So maybe it's not going to pull back. It just takes time for the people that actually deal in these futures contracts in the silver market to kind of get used to this. When we break out of this current consolidation and start moving higher again, it's going to move pretty fast.
Yeah.
And so we'll just see. That day is coming. I don't, you know, it's not going to be next week. But again, history, talk about history and precedent. It was just last July, 13 months ago, that we broke out of this long-term consolidation between 14 and 18 and moved 50% in 3 weeks. Yeah,
I remember.
So it's not like it hadn't happened before. So
I remember
that in mind.
I remember well. So what about what the action in cryptos? Have they become the new gold?
I think that's funny. You put it that way. And I know you don't do it deliberately, but that's one of the things I find most aggravating about the crypto people. I mean, pick on something else. I mean, I don't understand why I always see all these crypto, you know, gurus, you know, oh, you don't need gold anymore. You don't need a lot of things anymore if you want to own crypto. Why does it always have to be one or the other? I own gold. I own Bitcoin for the same reasons. It's always made this, you know, this A, B argument. You got to go only one or the other.
Yeah, binary.
Right.
That's usually propaganda when you see binary arguments. It's a non sequitur. Effectively, it's a non sequitur, which means that the conclusion doesn't follow from the choice, if you will. So
I don't see where the argument for or against Bitcoin has changed. I mean, it was 2 years ago, it was 10,000. Okay, it went to 60. And so now it's pulled back 25% from 60 when it's at 45. But 2 years ago, it was 10,000. Okay. Yeah. 6 years ago, it was 1,000. Uh-huh. And you've got this ever improving demand for something where the supply, you know, the new supply is continually being reduced. Mathematically, how does that not work? So I continue to hone, you know, the little bit of crypto that I have. But same I don't think there has to be some kind of mutually exclusive thing, like you said, a binary argument, one or the other. That just doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, well, I buy crypto partly because I just want to build a little position in it, but also because it's like watching a football game between two teams you couldn't care less about. And unless you bet on the game, you have zero interest in it.
Yeah.
So now I've got five different cryptos that to me are kind of meaningless. Somebody told me to buy them, my friend Ed, and I've got Cardano, I've got the Graph, I've got Chainlink and Ethereum and Uniswap. And I have no idea what any of them are going to do, but I'm up 15% on the latest rebound. So
why not?
I can't complain.
And it's like owning stocks. I mean, we've all sat here and talked about how ridiculous the stock market valuation is and has been since 2009, you know, and crazy and all this stuff. Look at the freaking chart, man. Yeah. Especially since Biden was elected. It has been a nonstop 45-degree angle up. Bounces off the 50-day moving average once every couple of months.
Yeah,
and it just keeps going up. Well, why? The Fed's creating $120 billion a month. Some of that invariably makes it into the stock market. It then gets levered up 20 or 30 times, and it just keeps going. You know, one of the greatest, at least on a non-inflation or real terms, one of the greatest performing stock markets historically. It's where the currency is being devalued, and it's got to go somewhere. Venezuela, Zimbabwe, you know, all these places. So, I mean, you'd be crazy to just swear it all off. You know, you might as well have some money in the stock market as an inflation hedge. You might as well have some money in crypto as an inflation
hedge. And real estate too.
Right.
anything outside the currency.
Right. But we know, here's the thing with gold and silver. If the current system, since it's been untethered to any real hard assets now for 50 years and 2 days as we record this.
Yeah.
Eventually you're going down this path where you lose confidence. Again, I mentioned Weimar Germany, you know, at some point it's a hockey stick up, you know, where you lose confidence gradually and then suddenly. And that's the direction we're headed. And every fiat currency ultimately gets destroyed that way because you print so much of it that it loses value and people lose confidence. And then what's going to happen? Just like at the end of World War II, you had to come up with a medium of exchange that people have confidence in. And so what they decide, they back the U.S. dollar with gold. It was something the world could use coming out of the, you know, the total disaster, economic disaster, you know, humanitarian disaster, World War II. And trade begins again. And, you know, you've got this medium that you can use. Well, eventually a crisis of confidence is destroying the dollar and it'll all happen at once someday. And you're going to want your gold and silver to see you through that storm because that's how history always acts. You swing all the way back to the other side to some kind of sound currency. And that's what your gold and silver provides you, is that kind of safe harbor through that storm. And so, yeah, we talk about price, the chart and all this kind of jazz and the futures contracts and all that kind of stuff. At the end of the day, that's, you know, my gold and silver, the price changes, but it just gets more valuable every single day because we just keep moving closer and closer to the end. And when the end comes, we'll see.
Hey, so true. You hit the nail on the head. It's life imitating South Park. I just remember that episode where they run out of credit and then Stanley gets his unlimited Amex card, platinum card, and he then reflates the economy and everybody can borrow again. And that's kind of where we're at now. We're in the South Park economy. So, hey,
South Park economy.
So you got to go over to tfmetalsreport.com if you want to find out about what's really happening in precious metals. Talk to some of the savviest traders and investors in that space, not to mention Craig. And really, for the price of less than a latte that I bought this morning at Starbucks per month, you can be a member.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. And, you know, people think, well, what do I need to pay attention to this stuff? Or, you know, I had a lot of people on my site that use the discussion of price to just simply time their physical purchases. You know, if we can look at what happened in June and go, eh, this chart doesn't look so good. And if you were thinking about buying a tube of Eagles, Silver Eagles that month, and instead of buying at 26, waited to 25 or 24, well, that just saved you $40. What'd the subscription cost you? 15? You know, so you can find value at the site in all sorts of ways. So thank you for the kind words.
Hey, my pleasure. And if you got a question for Craig, we'll forward it off to him and get you an answer. The email address is kl@carrylutz.com. Make sure you subscribe to our newsletter. Just sent one out, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Craig, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Good to see you, my friend. Hang in there.
Thanks for listening to Cary Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.